Welcome to Parents' Perspective. Just close the door, Taylor, Melanie called to her 8-year-old daughter. We don't want the rain to get all over the floor. But, Mom, Taylor came marching into the kitchen, do you realize some houses are built for rain? Melanie looked up from her cutting board. What? What houses are built for rain? She envisioned a large version of a yellow rubber duck and smiled in her daughter's direction. In other countries, Mom, Taylor earnestly continued, we learned it in school, the museum school. Some houses are built on stilts so the water won't get on the floor at all. She paused, reflecting. Maybe we could do that with our house. You think Dad would mind? From a parent's perspective, how do museum schools teach our children? I'm Sandy Burt.
And I'm Linda Perlis. Our guest works with schools that are actually museum schools. Dr. Sharon Schaefer is the executive director for the Smithsonian Early Enrichment Center, SEEC, a model program in museum-based education for preschoolers and kindergartners. As the founding director for SEEC in 1988, she was given the challenge of developing a program for young children that utilized the rich resources of the Smithsonian Institution and surrounding museums. She is responsible for designing seminars for training early childhood educators and museum professionals in object-based learning and arts-centered curriculum, consulting with schools and museums, and presenting at conferences and seminars nationally and internationally. Dr. Schaefer has 3 children, 2 boys and a girl, and 3 grandchildren, 2 girls and a boy, ages 2, 5, and 6. Welcome to Parents' Perspective, Dr. Schaefer.
Thank you so much for having me.
What is a museum or a museum-based school?
That's really a challenging question in some ways because they are all distinct. Each school defines itself according to its own vision. And so a museum school in one place may look very different than a museum school in another place. And I can certainly give you examples of that.
Great.
I think some museum schools see their vision as the partnership between the school and the museum, and it's the regular visits or excursions or expeditions of the students on maybe a weekly basis to the museum where learning is taking place, and it's that partnership that might define the museum school. In another school, it might be that the school takes on the role of the museum, where the students become curators and docents and registrars and specialists and preservationists. And in those roles, they then define and create exhibitions based on their own learning in the school. And so the school becomes a museum for parents and the community to visit. So in that sense, the museum school is different. In some cases, like the Henry Ford Museum School, it's a high school where there's actually a museum as part of the high school, and the students are involved in that museum. So depending on the particular school, the vision of the leadership is defined differently in each case. Now, in my own program, the Smithsonian Early Enrichment Center, or I'll refer to it as SEEC, our museum school is really located within the Smithsonian complex. With the Smithsonian Early Enrichment Center, the museum becomes an extension of the classroom. So every day the children go into the museum to learn about something that they're talking about and exploring in a classroom. And we do that in a very hands-on, interactive way so that it's age-appropriate and really reflecting what we know about how children learn. So each museum school is defined as it is developed. And so they're not all the same.
How does it work when a school takes on the coloration of a museum and still has to have math and has to have gym and has to have some of these things that you don't think about as being connected with a museum?
Well, I think that's really the beauty of a museum-based approach to teaching and learning. It's that it's object-based learning and visual literacy. So when you think about how do we construct meaning about our world, historians and scientists and anthropologists all use objects and documents and primary sources to understand their world. And what we're doing is encouraging children to use those same objects and visual arts and documents to understand and construct meaning about their world. So we learn about math, we learn about language, we learn about science and social studies and art, not only about our own community, but globally through these kind of explorations. And so it isn't just the content of a museum exhibit, but it is how we explore the ideas within it that bring about connections to math and science and literacy. And all of this connected to the standards that are required by the schools.
Is there a special mission of a museum school?
I think there is. I think in the early 90s, schools were looking at innovative opportunities for educational reform. In many cases, our public schools weren't working in the way we had hoped, especially for some children. And so opportunities to enrich and expand opportunities for learning for communities and groups of students became crucial to this new museum school movement. And what it does is it takes learning beyond the classroom. It builds on Howard Gardner's perspectives of multiple intelligences and the fact that we don't all learn in the same way. It really creates strong partnerships between the school and the community, which is very John Deweyan. All of
these are both important theorists in terms of the educational
world. Yes, John Dewey and Howard Gardner are both important theorists. And I think what's important is that we're building strong communities and partnerships to help support learning for children. And that's really what it's all about. And museum schools offer a different way to do that. Another reason that museum schools were initiated in some communities was that schools were either failing or they had a change in their population. The local community was leaving and going to private schools or better public schools in other areas. And in order to change what was happening in the school, increase the standards, bring something new and innovative to that school, educators and leadership were looking for something other than the standard school system. And so by writing a grant, getting additional funding to support this museum school partnership, it was bringing funds into the school and at the same time resources that weren't there before. And parents then began to view this new school, this magnet school or this other model program, in a way that they wanted their child to be a part of it as well. So then it brought people back into the school where schools were not doing well. And I think that all of those factors have influenced why schools have decided to take this journey or take this path.
We'll take a short break now and be right back to continue our discussion on museum schools.
The popular new book, Raising a Successful Child, Discover and Nurture Your Child's Talents, by Sandra Burt and Linda Perlis, is available at all major bookstores and on the web.
Welcome back to Parents' Perspective. We are talking with Dr. Sharon Schaefer about museum schools.
Are there certain ages of kids and maybe kinds of kids who can best benefit from this kind of teaching and learning?
I would say that depends on your philosophy and your point of view about education. From my point of view, object-based learning, museum pedagogy, thinking about these partnerships is enriching for students of all ages. For example, the students in my program at SEEK at the Smithsonian are preschool and kindergarten. In our Miami-Dade Museum magnet schools, we have elementary, middle, and high schools that have academies, museum-based academies, or the entire school is a museum magnet school. In my own work as an adjunct professor at the University of Virginia, I teach graduate courses, and I use object-based learning, which is the same basic foundation, in teaching my graduate classes in the history and philosophy of education. And I hear back from my graduate students who are your children's teachers. They are all teachers. And they say to me at the end of the semester that they learn most from my approach to teaching using object lessons. And they're now using those strategies in teaching their classes, whether it's elementary or middle school or high school, and regardless of subject area. So I think that we all benefit from this type of learning.
Can you give us an example of object-based teaching? We've been talking about that a lot.
Well, I think with object-based teaching, what you're thinking about is how you can make learning more authentic, more real. And so, for example, if I talk about a young child, I read a story about birds. I might be talking about some abstract concepts that go along with it if I'm simply discussing the story. But if I have a feather and I pass the feather around to every child and I say, "Tell me what you notice about this." And the child says, "It's soft." And the next child says, "It's bendy." And the next child says, "It's white." And the next child says, "It's light." And the next child says, "It's big." They are discovering and creating meaning through a direct sensory interaction with that object. And what it does is it creates a more complex and in-depth approach to learning that goes beyond the superficial nature of just saying, "Birds have feathers." And what we want to do is develop greater understanding, strengthen comprehension. And the only way to do that is by engaging students in deeper exploration.
I would think also that developmentally, the younger students would be particularly tuned in to doing something physical because of all the chemical connections that evidently happen from touching and so forth in the brain.
And you're absolutely right, and brain research has supported that within the first 3 years primarily, but certainly in the early years, that those sensory-based connections actually change the physiology of the brain, and they make a difference in what our children are able to learn in the future. And so we do want to strengthen that. But one of the things that happens in our society that always perplexes me is that as we get older, we think that that connection with the authentic object is less important because we develop a capacity to have an abstract understanding. And yet, in any situation with adults or teenagers or young children, we are all drawn to stuff, to objects. And if you have an opportunity to feel the real thing, to pick it up and look at it, examine it, see it from different perspectives, everyone will choose to do that over simply talking about it. But yet, we somehow as a society get away from that interaction with the object. And I think it works for everyone.
And we often use computer screens and other things as middlemen between the object and our learning process.
While technology is a wonderful addition to our learning and educational centers, what we want to do is use it for something that we couldn't capture in another way. We don't want to replace that firsthand knowledge, that direct experience that gives us so much more information than what you would find in a connection to a computer. But technology does offer opportunities that we couldn't get in any other way. And so we want to rely on it to strengthen and enhance our learning, but not to replace that which is natural and really much richer.
Dr. Schaefer, what kinds of results have you found in children who have attended these museum schools?
The very first thing that I notice is that children are more engaged in the learning process, that they are more motivated and interested in what's taking place. And that's probably the most important part of learning, because if you're not engaged, you don't learn. And so by creating this level of interest, excitement, passion, motivation, and it's a student-centered approach to learning, what you have is ultimately increased achievement. Again, educators and theorists in the field, researchers like Robert Marzano, talk about how critical it is to increase background knowledge for increasing student achievement. And the only way you get that is through experience. And so what museum schools offer is a kind of experience, not just willy-nilly, do anything you want, go take a tour and just walk through the museum, but really rigorous study and engaged conversation and discussion that helps you grapple with ideas. And so the museum-based approach places the student at the center of the learning and really engages the student in the learning process as opposed to being passive and having someone else talk to and just give you information. The information doesn't become your own until you apply it and do something with it. And in the museum schools, students are applying their knowledge on an everyday basis.
Children here in the Washington area who have the opportunity to come to the SEEK program then go on to other schools.
They do. And I had the opportunity to celebrate SEEK's 20th anniversary, which was really a wonderful event. And one of the speakers that I invited to the program was a 15-year-old graduate from our program. And I asked him to talk about a student's perspective, what it was like for him. And when Brendan spoke, he said that he didn't realize how many ways he was influenced by his experience being at SEEK as a preschooler and kindergartner. And so, for example, his interest in architecture and his desire to pursue that as a career went back to visits to the National Cathedral and talking about buttresses and gargoyles and shapes and things like that. And his other thought that he shared with us at the time was the fact that when he went into a humanities class, he's in 10th grade now, and he went into a humanities class and the instructor was talking about Alexander Calder and Monet and other artists, and Brendan was just simply listening to this, totally connecting because he understood and knew these artists from his early days at SEEK. And the other students had no connection to these artists whatsoever. And what Brendan realized at that moment in time was that he had an advantage because of his prior experience that his peers did not have. And those are just two examples that he cited. But I think it does give you a different way of looking at the world. And the arts and museums also offer a universal exposure, a global perspective, because it's not only about what's happening in your own community, but seeing how someone does something in another place, just like the houses on stilts, or the clothing people wear, or how they solve problems. And art is a universal language, and objects are representations of all cultures. And so in that way, children have exposure to the broader world. And that's so important in our global society.
I was wondering whether you found that children who are coming into the United States with a different language do particularly well in these kinds of object-based settings.
We really do. And again, many of our Miami schools that I work with are bilingual schools, and you truly can connect with children. They may not have all the English vocabulary, but they know what a feather is. And so if you have a conversation and you begin to give vocabulary, soft and flexible and bendy and white, it's right there. It's concrete. It's something they can connect with. And so their ability to pick up new language based on that object increases, which then allows them to be more capable of performing in a school. It's not because they lack the capacity. It's because they lack the experience with the English language.
Are there disadvantages to a museum school environment? This sounds so win-win, it's hard to imagine a problem.
I would assume that there are disadvantages to every kind of school. You can't be all things to all people. Every child doesn't have the same style of learning. For me, it's hard to look at the disadvantages because I embrace this approach to learning so much. But I do think that there are going to be teachers who may not really look at student-centered learning, who may not utilize the opportunities in the museums in a way that really is constructive in the learning process. Do I see that happening frequently? I really don't, but I certainly think that's a possibility.
We'll take a short break now and be right back to finish our discussion on museum-based schools.
For an audio CD of any parent's perspective show, send a check or money order for $15 with your name, mailing address, and phone number to Parents Perspective, P.O. Box 42283, Washington, D.C., 20015.
Welcome back to Parents Perspective. We're talking with Dr. Sharon Schaefer about museum-based schools.
In a situation where students or teachers are more auditorily connected and more theoretically connected to learning, is that a disadvantage in a more visually oriented environment?
I don't think so, because I think that while I would consider a museum-based approach to have a strong visual component, it's a balanced perspective. So students are still reading work texts. They're still having conversation. They're still listening to things. It's a balanced perspective. But what it doesn't do is it doesn't just simply look at teaching as teacher-centered, where I give you information and then you read the book, and it's a much more passive approach to learning. A museum-based approach is really an active, participatory, student-centered approach. But the teacher still gives information. There's still outside opportunities to take in information in multiple ways.
The viewpoint that you gave of Brendan, for example, shows a truly enriched environment can pay off. But would you say that the students in these environments are as thoroughly prepared in the traditional academic areas as children from other excellent educational backgrounds?
Oh, absolutely. I can certainly talk about the students from my program and how successful they are as they go into public and private schools leaving our program. They have very strong skills. And one of the reasons for that is that you're developing critical thinking strategies and ways to approach unknown. What we're doing in museums and when you encounter a visual work of art or an object is, how do I make meaning from this? How do I make a connection or build a bridge between what I know and this thing that I see? And when you develop that skill in critical thinking, it's something that you can apply for the rest of your experience in school. The other important thought there is that we're constantly wanting to have students be engaged in the learning process. And when they're excited about learning and they see themselves as competent learners from an early age, that carries over into future learning opportunities. And so I think you really are building a very strong foundation from the very beginning.
What resources would you suggest for parents who are getting very fired up about this idea?
You need to find someone who knows something about museum schools. This is not a model that is in every state, in every community. And if it's something you're interested in, find an expert who has that knowledge, who is able to help guide you and talk you through what the process would be. How do you create a community of learners, a community of stakeholders within your city that would support this kind of endeavor? Can you approach a museum who might be interested in partnering with a school? And then finding out how it works and where are the grant sources? Certainly charter school sources. I worked with a charter school in Iowa that was arts integration and museum-based learning. And that was monies that came from the state for a charter school that was part of the public school system. In the case of some of our other museum magnet schools that I work with, it's a Department of Education grant. But it's education reform, innovation in education. And if you're serving a population particularly that needs to be strengthened, a lot of the foundations are willing to support that. But I do think you need to look to someone who has some expertise in this. Certainly, I could help guide someone in that regard, but that's, I think, a beginning point.
How do you go about finding someone?
It's not really a well-known model across the country. I think the American Association of Museums might know about museum school partnerships. The Department of Education might know about museum school partnerships. At the Smithsonian Institution in 1995, we had a museum school symposium and brought together more than 100 individuals representing museum school partnerships. Now, granted, there might have been five people from one institution, but still there were more than 100 people interested in this education reform that was going on in the early 90s. So certainly, I could help contact someone.
How would someone contact you or the Smithsonian for further information?
Through my email, which is shaffers, as in Sam, at si.edu, or my phone number at 202-633-1394. And in either place, I can help guide or direct you to others that I might know that are in your location, or at least help give you some guidelines for how you get started. Our website is seec.si.edu, and the Smithsonian Institution website is si.edu, Smithsonian Institution. And there's a Central Office of Education at the Smithsonian. Again, many different educational organizations and individuals from there may be able to guide you as well.
Well, you have done a wonderful job of guiding us through the concept of museum schools and letting us see what a tremendous resource they are educationally for our children. Dr. Sharon Schaefer, thank you so much for being with us.
It's been a pleasure.
Our gift for our first caller is an autographed copy of our book, Washington, D.C. with Kids, 4th edition, published by Fodors. Just call us toll-free at 1-800-791-8573 with your name and mailing address. That's 1-800-791-8573 with your name and mailing address, and please spell anything that's not obvious. That's a big help to us. Mention show number 385 and tell us, if you can, what station you're tuning into.
Visit our website, www.parentsperspective.org, where you can even listen to a show of your choice. This is Sandy Burt and Linda Perlis. We're glad you could share Parents' Perspective. At the end of our program, we often thank individuals or foundations for their generous donations that help with the cost of producing Parents' Perspective programs. Parents' Perspective is a 501c3 nonprofit corporation. Today it is our turn to thank you, our listeners, for your tax-deductible contributions to our annual fundraising campaign. Please send your check or money order to Parents' Perspective Incorporated, Post Office Box 42283, Washington, D.C., 20015. Thank you for helping us continue to work for you. Our sound engineer is Nate DeLuca. Music for this program was composed and performed by Jonathan Burt.